Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, May 21st, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
So I'm tending bar down there at Eklund and Sweden's last Tuesday, and this little guy's drinking, and he says, so where can a guy find some action? I'm going crazy out there at the lake. And I says, what kind of action? And he says, woman action. What do I look like? And I says, well, what do I look like? I don't arrange that kind of thing. And he says, but I'm going crazy out there at the lake. And I says, yeah, but this ain't that kind of place.
As fascinating as that story is, I have even bigger fish to fry. We're back with more of the Erotic Mind series, but today we return to our roots, the world of words. After a couple of weeks of chat with a noted erotic visual artist, the series resumes with my conversation with a relative newcomer to the world of erotica. The curious thing is, in the past, when I've interviewed an author new to the erotica scene, he or she would speak demurely of finding his or her place in the genre. Today's guest is totally different. I have the pleasure of welcoming the extraordinarily talented Matthew Klickstein, who is as combative as he is accomplished.
Yeah, you got that right.
Matthew has a unique take on the role of erotica in our culture. He is filled with the fervor of a man poised to upset the apple cart. And his new book, Ragdoll, is making big waves throughout the industry. You will soon understand why that is, because I will prevail upon Matthew to read from his new work. This will blow your socks off, don't you know? For more about Matthew, his new book, and his amazing career, visit Oysters and Chocolate Erotic at oystersandchocolate.com. Use the search function in the header and type in Matthew Klickstein. That's Matthew with just one T, mind you.
Oh, he's a little guy, kind of funny looking.
I hope you're not referring to Matthew, because he will knock you to the ground. Speaking of delightful smut, now a word from our sponsor, the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It is phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? Remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now, you can underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Matthew, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm stoked that we have finally made this time to be together. I'm honored to be in such smutty company.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Are you honored that I'm honored? That you're honored?
You're honored, and I'm honored that this company is so smutty between us both, so it works out.
So would you like to say hello to all the nice people? I know they're just dying to meet you.
Hello, all the nice people who are dying to meet me. I'm dying to meet me, too, one day.
You know, ever since Samantha and Jordan over at Oysters and Chocolate told me what a hot shit you are, I couldn't wait for this opportunity to plumb the depths of your erotic mind. Again, my hat is off to our mutual friends for this fine connection. By the way, how long have you been involved with those delightful ladies?
I like to refer to them as girls, as a certain kind of fun connotation to it. So I've been involved with the girls for a little over a year now. I actually was writing for the daily newspapers out here in Boulder, Colorado, where the girls are from and where they live and where they operate Oysters and Chocolate. And I started doing articles on what they were doing because they are extremely busy and very illustrious.
Oh, I guess.
And they always made for really great copy.
Right.
So
right.
After a while, I just became friendly enough with them and became aware of what they were doing. And I said, you know what? I bet I can try this out. And I'd never read a real erotica book before, or what I thought was not a real erotica book, and tried one out. And they really enjoyed what I wrote, and I really enjoyed it. And we decided to go forward. So now they're my editors. So it works out really well.
I love them. They're such sweet ladies. I call them ladies. I call them chicks.
Sure.
I call them other things behind their back, too.
Yeah, but... Samantha, we always joke with her about this. Samantha has this adorable little baby voice, so it's really hard to not think of her as a girl. And she dressed up as Tinkerbell for Halloween. And so I just, you know, she's really living into that. So, you know, it works for everyone.
All righty. So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
Agreed.
Okay. So let's begin at the beginning. Is Matthew Klickstein your real name, or your nom de plume, or nom de erotica, as the case may be? And if it is a nom de smut, can you tell us why you decided to write under a pseudonym?
Matthew Klickstein is my real name.
Get out. Good, good, good.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the piece that I wrote. You know, I've always been a writer. I intend to always be a writer. And I have a very eclectic cachet of work. And to me, I think there's something really interesting about that. And I think it also says a lot for the erotica genre. And I want to be able to kind of come out and say, you know, this is okay, and, you know, this is me. I wrote this, and there's a lot of very dirty graphic stuff, specifically in Ragdoll.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I take credit for it, and I want it to be me, and whether it's connected to my children's books that I also do or will continue doing or what, you know, I think it's all just, as long as it's quality work, I think that's what matters, and I'm very proud of it. So I'm not going to hide behind a nom de plume. I understand why other people do it, and that's totally fine. I respect that some people need to do that. They have families or other kinds of jobs, and that's fine, but I think it's important to make a stand and say,
Totally agree. However, and I want to talk more about this in a minute,
sure.
but I also know that life can be pretty brutal, and the industry can be pretty brutal, and let's save that for just a moment. But for right now, since I knew very little about you when Samantha and Jordan sent me a copy of your new book, Ragdoll, I decided to do a little investigating on my own, and this is some of what I found. Matthew Klickstein is the writer of Sony Pictures' Against the Dark, starring Steven Seagal, co-creator of National Lampoon's College Town USA, and editor-in-chief emeritus of Entertainment Today's Southern California's oldest free weekly newspaper. Holy cow, what a resume! But wait! There's more. He has contributed articles and short stories to numerous publications throughout the country, and he has two of his novellas published, Daisy Goes to the Moon and Back to Hollywood, as well as My Dog Forgot How to Read, his talking ebook for children. I'm going to press you in a moment on how you went from children's stories to horror erotica, but let me finish this first. His rockumentary, Act Your Age, The Kids of Whidney High Story, chronicling the world-famous disabled rock band from East L.A., continues to screen throughout the nation and in the United Kingdom. You're such an accomplished fellow, and so busy too. When do you find time to touch yourself in purely?
You know, whenever I have a chance.
Okay, good.
I'm a big bathroom guy, so don't get into the bathroom afterwards. And a lot of the girls that I've been with actually are aware that that's a fun fetish, and we've actually been kicked out of many a bathroom in different parts of the country. So,
what a pervert.
Well,
I love that about you.
There's just, you know, there's something, especially a lot of the girls I end up dating are kind of opened up by someone who actually talks and thinks the way that I do, and also can still have the mindset that I have. So they get a chance to experiment a little bit, and sometimes that involves dirty places like public bathrooms.
What a guy.
Yeah, of which there are some scenes. There's a couple actually in Ragdoll. Funnily enough, I don't have any of those scenes here in front of me, but there are some bathroom sequences in Ragdoll.
Well, we're just gonna have to pick up a copy, don't you know?
Oh yes, that's a good idea.
So let's take a few moments and see if we can get to the bottom of this remarkable resume. So you don't live in L.A. I imagined you did, or you must have at one point, yes?
Yeah, I'm from Southern California originally, and I'm from a place that a lot of us are embarrassed to say we're from due to some TV shows and films that came out in the late 90s. I'm from Southern Orange County, but my life was very different than what you saw in the TV shows and movies as it was for most people who did not live in Newport Beach. I ended up going to film school at USC and worked in Hollywood right out of school. We did the National Lampoon show. I actually sold it with some friends the day I graduated.
Wow.
And ended up just, you know, working in the film business and doing a lot of journalism. I probably would have had some kind of ADD or ADHD diagnosis if my mom believed in that kind of thing. So instead, I just kept myself very, very busy rather than taking that role.
Okay.
I worked in film and journalism. And then we sold a couple of scripts. One of them got made into the Sony movie with Steven Seagal, For Good or Ill. And I left L.A. in 2008 after the writer's strike screwed me and a lot of very good friends of mine really, really bad ways, as they normally do.
Right.
So that was the end of my L.A. experience.
So how did you get your start in Hollywood? Were you waitressing at Schwab's?
No, Ron Turner already took that job. So what I did was, while I was in film school, I was really disappointed by the experience there, even though it was USC and even though I've been told it's gotten much better. I found that the reputation really did not uphold to the actual direct experience that one had. And a lot of the other students just really weren't that interested in film. Nobody was really trying to do anything in film. It was really disappointing, especially to be at a top school like that. So I spent a lot of my time outside of school interning and working as producer assistants on films, like pretty much right, when I got to USC, 17, 18, I was already working with some pretty big directors. And, I basically just did what I do, which is I made a lot of phone calls and sent a lot of emails and worked my ass off and showed that I can do it and that I can survive. And that worked. And slowly but surely, I started building a little bit of a cachet in the town and started meeting a few of the right people who didn't just say producer on their business card, but also actually were producers.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up developing a project that went to National Lampoon, like I said. I sold it with a couple of friends who were a little bit older than I, and that really took off. And, around the same time, just a few other things came together too, with just a friend who became an editor of a really big film magazine out there, and he brought me in. It was just sort of a perfect storm of, I was in New York and met someone there who was working on a film, back in LA. So I ended up doing that. It was Mysterious Skin, Greg Araki's film. He's a really great filmmaker and really good guy. Kind of a gay Spike Lee, if you will. Just a lot of things kind of all came at once. It was a little fortuitous, but, I was also working my ass off as I always do. So it was a little bit of both.
All right. So, what is a talking ebook?
Talking ebook is something that iTunes is now starting to promote. We're actually, my dog is one of, I think, only about 100 right now that they're promoting in the entire world. Basically, it's a book that you can read online or on your computer or Kindle or whatnot, and your child or you can have the book read to you. It'll highlight words, and it'll read to the children or to you, as the case might be. My dog forgot how to read also, just real quick. I don't know how appropriate it is to talk about that here, but is the first of a forthcoming series we're doing. We're going to have My Dog Forgot How to Brush His Teeth, My Dog Forgot How to Be Nice, My Dog Forgot How to Be Brave, and so forth. So we're really excited about all of that.
Wow, that's amazing. So I watched the trailer for your rockumentary, Act Your Age, and I thought it was fantastic. How did you get involved with these remarkable kids?
Yeah, they are remarkable. If there's any group of people in my entire life that have affected me, in the most valuable way, aside from, you know, my mom and my dad, it would be the kids of Whitney High. I've been working with them for more than 10 years now, and I'm still very close with all of them. And I do want to say just real quick, we actually lost one this last year, Tony Whitfield, who was a really great guy. Unfortunately, with disability and whatnot, sometimes people get different kinds of diseases or whatnot, and we lose them. So Tony was a really fantastic member of the Kids of Whitney High. We just lost him. So that was very sad. But I've been working with people with disabilities through most of my life, and also still do. It's just another thing that I do. I was the special ed teacher's assistant in junior high school when I was 11. And just continued working with them. And when I got to film school at USC, I heard about there was this group of young adults with disabilities called the Kids of Whitney High. And I wanted an album. I couldn't find one. And it turned out that their school from which they were originally based was literally walking distance from USC. Popped into a class, watched them do their thing. It was great. Drove the teacher home, who's also their band leader. And, I just fell completely in love and worked with them for years and years on music videos, on helping them get to gigs, on setting up gigs for them. I put together this 2-week tour up the West Coast that was fantastic. We went from LA to Seattle and back, and that's really what the movie is about. And, basically we just kept going on with that. So Kids of Whitney High, okay, by me. And, you know, the thing that's really great, too, I'll just say real quick, is aside from the gimmick of there being all young adults with disabilities, their music is actually quite good. They're really, really funny. It's got a real sense like a Wesley Willis or Daniel Johnston, and really just has a great vibe to it. Some of it's really dark. The lyrics are very insightful. And so it's not just, oh, it's a bunch of kids with disabilities. They actually have some really great music. Kids of Whitney High show is a lot of fun.
Gosh. So now, the question I've been dying to ask, with all this amazing mainstream stuff under your belt, how and why the switch to erotica and horror erotica to boot?
Well, first and foremost, I want to make it really clear that Jordan and Samantha and I are trying to brand the portmanteau of horror and erotica. So we're actually calling it horotica.
Oh, cool beans. Good, yeah, good.
Exactly, which also, of course, has a fun double entendre in there as well. I do have to credit that to Oni, who is a gal pal muse of mine from New York. So she's the one who came up with that title. Her name is Oni. Anyway, so real quick, basically it's quite literally, like I said, I became friends with Samantha and Jordan through writing about them, and I started just talking with them and going to some of their readings and whatnot. And I realized a lot of the writers that I always really admired, your William Burroughs and your Henry Millers, and certainly people like R. Crumb and certain others that I never really thought of as erotic necessarily before, were doing a lot of erotic work in their sometimes even mainstream work, and even, you know, obviously in a lot of their underground work. I just never put it together. I always saw erotica, unfortunately, as a lot of people I think do now, as, you know, something for tired housewives to read about, you know, Fabio and so forth. So I saw it as more of a graphic romance harlequin thing.
Uh-huh.
So once I realized that erotica could actually be good writing, and Samantha and Jordan at Oysters and Chocolate are really about smart and smutty, I realized, A, I had written erotica in the past without even knowing it, and B, that it's something that I could pursue. And again, I tried to do it. I enjoyed it. It turned out really great. I basically kept telling myself and friends who asked about it, you know what, I'm going to write a book like I normally do, because, you know, I write books all the time just for fun or what have you, except every now and then I'll stop and there'll be a long scene of graphic sex in it, which should be kind of why not? And I really, just real quick, I really appreciate certain filmmakers, too, who are able to do both also. I think a lot of what David Cronenberg, for example, was doing in the earlier years with movies like Crash, and even, you know, Naked Lunch and so forth. You know, there was so much sex, and it was so graphic, and, you know, Existenz also. And yet he still told a really great story.
Right.
And if you ever see him in an interview, he's probably one of the smartest people alive right now. And just other filmmakers like Michael Haneke and Catherine Breillat and Lars von Trier, and even, you know, going back to people like Pasolini, or even a little bit of Fellini. I just watched Amacord again. There's certainly some erotica in there. It's great when you can have some, you know, good graphic, you know, purient sex, but also tell a great story and have great character development. And for me, just to kind of bring it all back to home again, like Bob Dylan would, you know, it comes down to I wanted to write a really good book. And instead of writing a children's book, or instead of writing about people with disabilities, or instead of writing about other things I've written about, I decided to write an erotica book for me. And that, again, goes back to why I kept my name. To me, it's another book, and it happens to be in that genre. It's no different than when Sting decided to do an album of, you know, playing the lute instead of the bass. You know, it's the same thing for me.
Right. But as I alluded to a little while ago, the popular culture can be very cruel, and so I have to ask you, have there been any repercussions, mainstream repercussions, to this new venture, or do you expect them to be? Because, you know, there are people in this, both in publishing and in just regular society, who have to have everything compartmentalized, where, you know, erotica is over here, and children books are over here, and docudramas are over there, and never the twain shall meet. And they don't like people who cross genre.
Yeah, you know, I've actually not had a problem with it yet. In fact, the only problems I've had so far is with learning how incredibly inhibited and conservative and disturbingly reactionary the mainstream erotica world is, actually. we've gotten a lot of complaints already, and Jordan and Samantha, thankfully, like myself, love that. We're kind of like the you know, the no wave filmmakers again, like Nick Zed and Lydia Lunch, and those who, you know, they, and John Waters in his early days, were, you know, they would rather people throw eggs than to applaud. So, you know, I know the girls want to make money too, as do I, but for this book, I think we're having a little bit of fun with it.
Yes.
And so we have actually gotten some criticisms and some complaints from people within the erotica world. And so, you know, that's just making us want to do what we're doing even more. And I'm really glad to have Jordan and Samantha at Oysters and Chocolate there as cheerleaders to keep me as devious and evil as possible, as long as we're being smart about it and having fun about it.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think it's time that someone came out and said, you know, this is okay, and really makes a stand. You know, I'll make a really quick analogy. I also, you know, I'm not trying to tell anyone to take drugs or to do more drugs than they should or whatever it might be, but I feel that this country is very reactionary also about its drug culture. And when Michael Phelps was caught smoking pot, instead of apologizing, which, you know, I understand you have sponsors and things like that, I understand why people need to do that. It just wouldn't have been nice if he had said, yeah, I smoke pot. I also won more gold medals in the Olympics than anyone of all time, so maybe we need to recheck some of our facts and figures and myths about smoking marijuana. I feel the same way about what's going on now with the erotica world. We see this in, you know, Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble are starting to sell more and more erotica. It's one of the only literary genres that's been on the rise since 2005 because sex sells and people want it.
Yeah.
And you find, of course, you know, has a cliche become a cliche? You know, it's the people that act the most pious who really are the most devious. And, you know, I think if we just kind of put it out there and allow it to be okay, and someone to stand up and say, yeah, I do children's books. Yeah, I do erotica books. Yeah, I work with people with disabilities. Yeah, I do all these different things. And, you know, what we should be worrying about is it good work and nothing else? I think that that's something that's really important. And I'm happy to take those slings and arrows. And I'm happy to see that Samantha and Jordan are as well, because we're all very proud of Ragdoll, and we're all very proud of the company that they've created. And, you know, we're hoping that we can be pioneers and say, you can have someone out there who does both. You know, and here we are, John Waters for a while now has been trying to do his first G-rated movie. I mean, you know, and he made Hairspray. He made it work. So it clearly it can be done.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other people like Gus Van Sant, for example, in film, who can go back and forth between doing a really mainstream, kind of boring, tepid movie like Finding Forrester with Sean Connery in it, and then go back and do something like Last Days or Jerry or Elephant. And, you know, I think that's the real mark of a true artist, and that's what I aspire to be, someone who can do both. And I want to prove that it can be done, and it can be done well, as long as you're putting in that really good effort. So.
Right. Well, the reason that I asked that question is that I have a new book coming out in a matter of days, and it has to do with death and dying. And I've turned several people in the death and dying industry onto the book, and they went and found me, you know, online Richard Wagner, PhD, ACS, and found Dr. Dick Seck's advice, and they stopped communicating with me because they thought that, you know, somebody who is producing a site like Dr. Dick Seck's advice ought not be writing a book about death and dying. And I have a children's book coming out in a matter of months, and also the same thing is true. You know, I mean, sooner or later they're going to figure out that, you know, Richard Wagner, the author of the children's book, is also Richard Wagner, Dr. Dick, and you know, I just expect that there's going to be a shitstorm, much like the one that apparently you caused over at KJB's site.
Right. Yeah.
Our good friend KJB. I love her.
Yeah. No. That, I mean, we're all very we're all very happy that she was courageous enough to print this article that I wrote about misogyny and my being viewed as misogynistic. And again, I really felt like I was invoking people like your Bukowskis and your R. Crumbs, which I don't think there are enough of.
Yes, I totally agree.
You know, and I think it's important, whether you're joking or not, or I think it's really important to be pressing these buttons. And, you know, that was really this. I'm new to the erotica world. I'm a novice here. I'm a total neophyte. And to come in and within days of releasing my very first erotica book, to have people were literally emailing KJB personally and telling her, you should take that off because people are going to think that you agree with it. And it's like, how? What? Like, what kind of like fundamental Christian logic is that? I just don't understand it at all. Where it's like, you know, I thought that's a lot of what erotica was supposed to be about, was freedom and liberation. And who cares if you agree with it or not? You know, you got to put it out there. And, you know, I'm Jewish, and I would defend the Nazi's right to say he wants to kill me, because I think there's a reason the freedom of speech is the First Amendment to the Constitution. Because all the other amendments that came after are based on that. If you can't talk about these things, then nothing else is done.
Right.
And so it's very shocking to see that. And, you know, we'll see, Richard, about if it has any kind of effects, because just real quick, I actually do have a very large, probably one of my largest mainstream projects is coming out. I won't get into it too much, but I'm actually going to be doing a history of Nickelodeon.
Wow.
Network. And, you know, there's been absolutely no kind of, you know, problems with that. And I don't know if it's people just haven't checked or looked or whatever, but, you know, there's been no issue. And for me, again, I think it really comes down to the work that I've been doing developing this book, this history, is, first of all, very adult. You know, it's not graphic or sexual, of course, but it's for people who are older who want to read about the history of the 80s and 90s. So I think it's the right kind of market anyway.
Right.
You know, I could see the same people reading the Nickelodeon book who would read, you know, the erotic book. I don't think the two have anything to do with each other, except they happen to be made by the same person. You know, we'll see what happens. I don't, you know, there hasn't been any problems yet, and I hope that there aren't, you know, any real repercussions, but there are. I mean,
right.
You know, there's really nothing I can do about that at this point. But I think it's important for people to just press forward and, you know, do what they can. And let me give you accolades for, you know, doing the same thing, where you have a book about death and dying, and you have a children's book, and you're also involved in the erotica world. You know, I think it's really important, you know. It's all, as long as it's good work, that's what matters,
right,
you know.
Right.
The day that I do this equal to Where's My Car, that's when I think that I should be in trouble.
Speaking of good work, I'm going to press upon you to share a juicy tidbit from Ragdoll with us. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
We'll start from the start, as the characters from Alice in Wonderland would have wanted us to do. This is the prologue to Ragdoll. He wrapped himself tightly around her like a straitjacket, silently, propped up on his side, spooning her from behind in the darkened bedroom of his ramshackle apartment. Darkened but for the amber street lamps illuminating the closed white plastic blinds from the outside, considering how it all came to be, his bare chest burrowing into her back, His pale, blotchy, dry skin with thick black hair curling out from his sternum, grinding up into the backside of her stretchy, black, crushed velvet blouse. His constrictive navy blue polyester pants rubbing against her army green gabardine skirt, her exposed knees a prelude to her smooth, delicate legs capped by the daintiest of toes. His own toes, thick, stubby, playfully toying with hers as he pushed against her feeble, limp body, stretched out before him, malleable to his every desperate thrust, arms clasped around her without any notion of letting go, cupping her tiny, firm baby breasts, braless under her wrinkled top. His stalwart talons clung to them, spooning her frail, ragdoll body. The faded brown blanket and blue sheets were strewn frantically about, revealing a billowy mattress that appeared coffee-stained. His face delving hopelessly into her cool flaxen hair, silken, down-feathered, perfect dirty blonde. Her nipples, the texture of hard yet sculptable cheese, poked through her loose blouse against his porous fingertips, caressing these nubs with his eyes closed. His face plunged deeper into her airy, crisp, brisk hair, deeper still to the nape of her frigid marble neck, milky white and pure, her skin lined by the finest of nearly imperceptible feminine fuzz, his cock growing, detained by the oppressive, ever-tightening polyester of his pants, purchased for cheap at the nearby vintage store on Main Street. He strapped her to him by his thick arms as he pumped himself against her curving body, which wilted to his thrusts, his frenzied fingers mindlessly kneading her palm-sized breasts, a mad craving to drag his throbbing erection across her denuded ass crack, hidden under her black, lacy underwear. His penis pulsed to what he could only imagine to be the erratic fluttering of the warm, moist flesh bubble that was her incipient clitoris. The tingle of ice melted down his shivering spine like silvery vodka down his throat. He swallowed hard, pulling up her skirt only in the slightest, his midsection drilling her shallow bony behind encased in taut eggshell skin, the prominent outline of each buttock peeking out from the bottom of the skirt, not wanting her to submit, wanting her to resist him with everything she might have in her diminutive body. She needed to understand that sex with him would only hurt her emotionally and physically. He yearned to do things to her that her feeble little body was not meant for, and he would overcome her enjoyable struggling, for she was small and would know it to be futile in the end. He would inevitably find passage to shove himself inside her, if he so chose, he being the man, she the little girl. His right hand tugged the décolletage of her blouse down into a wrinkled sash across her belly, facing as ever away from him. His left hand, poking out from underneath her, molested the soft lacteal orb of an exposed breast, her pencil eraser nipples popping outward in declaration of readied excitement, his right leg wrapped around hers clamped together, his left hand reaching ever higher up from her chest to clasp her fragile neck, his thumb rubbing faintly across the dove belly skin underneath her chin, her tasseled mass of gossamer hair falling down as a refreshing waterfall between their bodies. He investigated the hardly discernible fuzz of her nape with his fingertips, his alligator skin fingers wrapped around her uncharacteristically warm larynx, feeling her gentle heartbeat, her neck only too easy to crush. He closed his eyes, inhaled her subtle earthy aroma of sour milk and pasty bread, his bulbous nose and thick full lips lapping up and down her chiffon hair, his mouth gaping open for a deep, thirsty breath of air that pulled her all-consuming fragrance into his lungs, and still he thrusted his bulging crotch against her rear, pulling her closer to his naked chest, trembling, chewing on her hair, wanting so wishfully to swallow and make her his.
And that's the prologue?
Yes. I mean, it's not the full prologue. It's actually
an excerpt. Oh, God.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at my clock and I see that our time is up for today. what a note to be left on. But I'm not going to let you go. I can't let you go. not after that. Is there any chance that you could come back next week and talk with us some more?
You know what? Why not? Sure, for you anything.
Joy, that's wonderful. And you know, I have to give Jordan and Samantha 50 cents for that, because I know they're prodding you to say those nice things. Okay, so before we go today, can you give us some place on the net where we can read about you and buy your book?
Yes, you can go to oystersandchocolate.com. They have some information about me there, and they also have some really great artwork and photography and other people's poems and short stories. And that's where you can find Ragdoll, along with a few of their other newly released e-books and novellas and such. You know, as for me, as you just said, as we talked about a lot, I'm all over the internet. So if anyone wants to look me up and see about some of the other things that I've done or do, they certainly may. I have a really fun YouTube page, actually, with some short films I did. That's actually not the Kids of Whitney High site, but it's called youtube.com/grownupchildren. Has some fun short films there. And then, of course, people are, please go and check out the Kids of Whitney High. That's W-I-D-N-E-Y. They're really great, and they've got some interesting ideas about sex and love and whatnot as well. A lot of them are from, you know, some of the really bad areas of East L.A. So, you know, don't, as they themselves say, they're not all angels. So I think they're really also pushing for a lot of the same things I am, which is, hey, just because we've got disabilities doesn't mean we don't have naughty minds also sometimes. So good for them. And yeah.
And I'll have a bunch of those links on our posting for today's podcast. So until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Be well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my interview with Matthew Klickstein and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Okay. Are you sure? Because, I mean, how do you know?
I know because I'm the boss of the whole damn shebang. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like, takes practice. Sure, you can learn how to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with the stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice, this puppy will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old U.S. of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and choke the chicken at the same time. How fun is that? Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.